This is the fifth in a series of lectures about the clinical process following the classic paradigm for patient-clinician interaction introduced in a previous lecture. In these earlier lectures, we covered how clinicians gather and analyze data about a patient, we covered numerous techniques for reaching a diagnosis, and we discussed how to formulate a plan to treat or manage the patient's problem once it is well enough understood to do this. In this final lecture in the series, we discuss the next step, which is communicating the plan for the patient to all those who might need information about it. It is not clear how far back the practice of keeping records of our patients goes, but it does go back at least as far as this quote from Sir William Osler, who recommended to young medical students, "Never ask a new patient a question without a notebook and pencil in hand." To discuss this issue, let's consider a patient who has come to see a clinician to establish care. In the course of the visit, a problem list has been generated, which includes diabetes, causing frequent urination, thirst, and an increased appetite, as well as high blood sugar. The list also includes high blood pressure, with three previously recorded blood pressures that were abnormal, and evidence on the cardiogram that the heart is being affected. The list also includes high blood pressure, with an LDL far above the goal at 162 and a high triglyceride test of 250. The patient is also overweight, with a body mass index of 34. As the clinician develops a management plan for each of these problems with the patient, which will evolve over time, it becomes important to communicate these problems and the plans for them to others. Who is the audience for these communications? Well, it turns out quite a few people and entities play some role in the patient's care. The patient, of course, but also, on occasion, family, friends, or even the public. Clinical staff need to be involved, the nurses, laboratory technicians, therapists, and so forth, who may be called upon to deal with the patient. There is also the clinician, him or herself. In part, the process of keeping notes is communicating with oneself at a future time. When diagnosis is uncertain or referral is needed, there is communication with colleagues and consultants. One or more insurance companies will also need some information in order to improve payment. There is also the possibility, hopefully never realized, that attorneys will be reviewing the record sometime in the future, looking for information to support their client. A variety of regulatory agencies, government and professional, have an interest in making sure that health systems and health professionals are acting appropriately. Beyond this, the information in the clinical record may be used for research by those who do data mining, and for performance measures and quality improvement. So the record, which will be created by the clinician, will be used by a very diverse set of audiences, each speaking different languages, each with different goals. The question arises, what is the correct or appropriate message for each of these audiences? Most important and first on the agenda is communicating with the patient. This involves some degree of patient education, explaining what's wrong, what can be done, and how it came about. There is also a need for specific instructions about what to do, and these instructions have to be put in a language and format that the patient can use effectively. There frequently is a need for reassurance about what will happen, and a need to motivate the patient to become more engaged in their care, or indeed to help the patient maintain hope when the prognosis is grave. Whatever the problem, whatever the prognosis, patients may need acknowledgement, acceptance, and a clear understanding that the clinician will be there for them. Communicating the plan to the patient may involve any or all of these goals. Very often, there are others who will be interested or need to know about the patient's problem and treatment plan. Significant others, parents, children, siblings, best friends, possibly even the landlord. It all depends on the patient and his or her relationships. The questions arise, what does each of these individuals need to know? What will be best for the patient in terms of information sharing with their family and friends? What will be best for the family member? What can legally be disclosed? What can ethically be disclosed? Clearly, there are limits in law and regulation that help answer some of these questions. But in clinical practice, the answers to these questions are often individualized, depending on the needs and the condition of the patient, as well as their loved ones. So the second part of communicating the plan is figuring out what to communicate to the patient's family and friends, and how to do this. This can be a very important part of the management of patients with significant impact on outcomes. After considering the patient and the family, there is a whole host of clinical staff who need differing amounts of information about the patient, the problem, and the management plan in order to carry out their role in the process. Nurses, pharmacists, dietitians, persons who perform physical therapy, occupational therapy, respiratory therapy, and the like. Laboratory technicians, x-ray technicians. Each of these is likely to need information specific to their task, and very often they can contribute more when they have some contextual information. An x-ray technician who knows what the problem you are looking for is may make better decisions about which types of x-rays to take. A dietitian will need information about the patient's various diagnoses, habits, and background, as well as the clinical goals. Each member of the team needs some, but not all, of the information to help them contribute. A less obvious person with whom the clinician must communicate is himself or herself. As Sherlock Holmes said, "Nothing clears up a case so much as stating it to another person," referring to the cognitive processing that goes on as one organizes and articulates the information. One understands the case better after going through this process of organizing and articulating, whether this is verbally in stating it to another person or by creating a written record. There is a processing effect to recording the case. There is an effect of imposing structure and order. And there may be some impact of the recording technology that is used, dictating, writing, typing, or using various types of macros and smart text. Creating clinical notes not only has an effect on the clinician's processing of the case, but is also a means of communicating with himself or herself in the future. Today's note, if well written, becomes an excellent basis for reestablishing the state of affairs on the next patient visit, which may be many months or even years away. There is also often the need to communicate about the patient with other clinicians, one's colleagues or consultants. In discussing the case with colleagues, such as signing out of a patient over the weekend or transferring the patient to another person's care for the future, there are considerations of future responsibility, of format, content and detail, which will vary depending on the purpose of the communication. Overnight coverage on call requires less information and detail than permanent transfer of patient care responsibility. There often is a certain economy in this discourse, expressed in the observation, "Experts share knowledge not only of their domain, but of the structure and goals of their discourse." This shared knowledge of structure and goals of the discourse can make communication between colleagues quite efficient. When it comes to consultants who are being called upon to address specific issues, an essential consideration is to ask a clear question. If one communicates a clear question to the consultant, one is far more likely to get a good answer in reply. So questions arise as to how much information, which information to share, depending on who is being consulted. The neurologist, psychiatrist, cardiologist, or radiologist are each likely to need different information to address the problem in their specialty. Simply sending everything runs the risk of forcing them to find a needle of clinical data in a haystack of irrelevant information. Another group with whom the clinician must communicate the plan and the diagnosis are insurance companies in order to secure payment. In most cases, these organizations will require a diagnosis expressed as an International Classification of Diseases code, or ICD-9, even if the diagnosis is not yet known. They also will require expression of the service or procedure in terms of a current procedural terminology code, or CPT-4. Beyond these codes, which may not always exactly describe what the clinician is thinking, there will frequently be a need to provide certain details that support a given diagnosis or treatment in order to justify payment. This is another communication of the patient's problem and management plan, which must be accomplished by the clinician. There are still other audiences with whom the clinician may be communicating. One hopes it will not be necessary, but there may come a time when lawyers examine the record to look for information that supports their client. And this may well be on the mind of the clinician as he or she creates the record. Various government and private regulatory agencies have an interest in using the medical record to determine the clinical processes of care are appropriate. Others may use the medical record in aggregate for data mining purposes to learn about diseases, treatments, or practice patterns. Still others will use the record in aggregate to perform clinical or outcomes research, quality and performance improvement, and patient safety studies. A major challenge for the clinician is creating appropriate communications for all of these audiences at the same time.